Welcome to the Run for God Run Club, where you will find God in a runner's space.
Welcome to the Run for God Run Club. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail, where you can, in turn, inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. Well, I am your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you straight from the Upward Sports Studio. Have you ever encountered a dog while out for a run or walk? That may be a dumb question. I think we all have if we've been doing it for any time. Well, this week's story has a couple of dog encounters and how they're connected to our prayers. You don't want to miss that. And then I'm going to talk about running against the wind and going the wrong way. And back in the studio, after letting Darren Lewis fill his seat last week, is Run for God founder, Mitchell Hollis.
I was happy to let him fill my seat.
Yeah.
That's one good guy right there.
It is.
I don't care what you say about him, Dean.
Yeah, he's got a heart as pure as gold.
Yeah, he does. He's got a little bit of energy too.
Yeah.
A little bit of energy.
Yeah. We've been meeting to run every other week. Yeah. He's a good guy for sure. And you were out doing some cool stuff that we can't talk about.
Right.
But some really cool top secret stuff.
Yeah, well, I can't wait to talk about it. But hey, something I can talk about. Let's park here for just a second. So we have been in the thick of app building, the new app experience that's coming out this fall, which is, you know, these guys are doing an incredible work. I really think this app is going to rival the likes of Strava and Garmin. And I mean, it's really cool, all the detail that's going into this. But something we haven't talked about a lot is the church model. That is coming back this fall. So What you're going to start to see communication from us, almost challenging you, almost daring you to start a 5K challenge in your community this January. You know, COVID pretty much decimated the church model. What we didn't know that we now know is that God was ushering in Run Club at that time. And so Run Club took off. The church model kind of fell away. Well, now we're creating the perfect storm.
Yeah.
We're bringing those two, what got us to where we are for 9 or 10 years, couple that with what has sustained us for the past 4 years being Run Club, and we're putting those together. And I can't wait. And so if you're out here, if you're out there listening to us, maybe you've taught a 5K challenge in the past. Maybe you've never taught a 5K challenge, but you've thought it sounded like a neat idea, but you've been part of Run Club and that hasn't been an option up until now. You're a Run Club member, or you're just listening to this podcast somehow and you don't know anything about us. I'm going to ask you to start praying about it right now. I think I speak for thousands of prior Run for God coaches when I say it will be one of the best things you've ever done.
Amen.
As it relates to your faith and this sport that you love. Your perspective on those around you, the running community, completely changes. I know it did for me. Mm-hmm. I know it did for you. I speak for both of us for sure.
For sure.
And so many others out there. It will... This is not a cliche. It will change the community that shows up to that. And it's a really special community. And then, you know, in the past, we've always had the what's next. We have all these other programs now, but we've also got Run Club that all of these graduates can drop into, and then they can experience the magic that we've seen Run Club create. The people who don't know each other, but they become fast friends, and they've never even met. So, I don't know. I'm so excited. I want to have at least 100 classes starting the first week in January. Now, we've had north of 6,000 communities around the world do the 5K challenge since 2010. So, I don't think that's a big ask.
No.
I don't think that's a big
Completely reasonable.
So, if you're out there, stay tuned. You're gonna start seeing correspondence from us. You know how I am when I start wanting people to do something. Number one, I don't want people to do something unless I believe in it. And that's why I'll bombard your email. I will bombard your email inbox because I want you to experience this. If you've already done it, you know what I'm talking about. But if you've never done it, experience it with us.
Absolutely. And the stuff that you were doing this past week is going to make that even more magical.
Yeah, right? There's a lot of moving parts that are going to come together to make one really cool experience.
Yep. And if you're out there and you have done a class before, the app is going to change the way you do the class a little
bit. Sure, absolutely.
And it's going to make things easier on you.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. But I did hear something the other day. I don't remember they were talking about. They were talking about somebody who was very careful not to say it's easy, that something is easy to do. So when we say the class is easy to do, it is. It's easy for an instructor to do. Sure. But there's still work involved.
Sure.
Oh, it was the upward stuff.
Yeah.
There's still work involved. So don't think that being a coach is easy, but it's totally worth it. There is some work, and you will enjoy the work that's involved in it.
Right. I mean, we're like a broken record around here. Do hard things.
Yeah.
Yes, you're right. We make it as easy as possible, but you still have to facilitate. You still have to get up and talk to people. But it's totally – Dean, the very first class in January of 2010, I had never taught anything in my life.
Yeah.
In my life, I was so scared it wasn't even funny. But the question I asked that first night of the very first ever Run for God class, 5K challenge, is still the question that we tell people to ask today because it's what put me at peace.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, I looked out at the crowd and I said, why are you here?
Yep.
I really don't know why I'm here, is what I said. I don't understand why God's got me here. I feel like I don't have the credentials. I'm not a pro runner. I'm not, a pastor. So I asked the question, why are you here? And the answers that started to come from these people who had signed up for this class, man, I knew that first night, this is going to turn into something. Yeah. I didn't know it would be this magnitude at that point, but I knew something special was starting. And we've seen that same thing happen in class after class after class all around the world over the past 13 years. And I'm so excited to be bringing it back.
Absolutely. We had a post last week from Carrie Pearson King. She said, good morning, Run for God family. I'm praying for the many who are up and ready to run today. It has been a while since I posted, in part because I haven't been running consistently. A change in my job a few years ago has made the choice to run that much harder. This year, I took baby steps, finding a colleague who would run with me twice a week. That time became precious, often ending with us praying for one another, our colleagues, and our day ahead. I knew it was time to do more. I've missed longer runs and races, but I was still struggling with where and how to begin. Then two in this group posted that they were running in a race down the road from me, and their post kept coming up to the top of my feed, like God kept saying, Gary, this is for you. Start here. So 2 weeks ago, I showed up, and God did too. It wasn't about the race or the run, but about meeting fellow runners who love Him and sharing our journeys, our stories of His goodness and faithfulness. It was the reminder I needed to get me out the door this week. My work commitment doubled this week, but so did my runs. I made it out the door, which in turn made the work more manageable. Why do I forget this in these seasons of transition? Are you like me in a season where you want to, but are struggling with doing? This is your day, my friend. Grab your shoes and step out the door. It doesn't have to be a long run, and it doesn't have to be what you once could do. Do what you can today. Give the steps to Him and remember that the many steps He has blessed before. He is faithful in our weakness and wants to work in and through us. He's showing up today. Are we? Thanks, Kimberly, Jennifer, Misty, Tim, and Elizabeth for being His tools to motivate me. Colossians 3:15-17. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body you were called to peace. And be thankful. Let the message of Christ dwell among you richly as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom through psalms, hymns, and songs from the Spirit, singing to God with gratitude in your hearts. And whatever you do, whether in work or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through Him. to God be the glory. What a great post.
You know what's crazy? And it kind of goes back to the whole, what I just talked about with the church model. I did not see Carrie's post. And she makes a statement in here, and I'm going back up, that she showed up to that run, but it wasn't about the run.
Yep.
It wasn't about the race. It was about friendship.
Yep.
And the cool thing is I don't know the context of this, but when she named off Kimberly, Jennifer, Misty, Tim, and Elizabeth for being his tools to motivate me, we know those names.
Yeah.
They're hundreds of miles away. I don't even know the exact town they're in, but we... I have this... I've been hearing this Ted Danson commercial on a podcast I'm listening to. He's got a podcast now that says where everybody... It's called Where Everybody Knows Your Name.
Yeah.
Off the old Cheers thing. It is so cool. I don't know of any other online community that is as close as this community. I just don't.
I agree with
from
you.
From people who have never met. Now, yep. There are some that they're neighborhoods and things like that. But this club is spread all across the world. Mm-hmm. And these people know each other's name. They know each other by name. And yep. We know their names.
Yep.
I mean, we see so many of these names on a daily basis, and we know them.
Yep.
And that's just so cool. She captured the magic of Run Club right here. So we've talked about the church model coming back and the magic of Run Club. And right there is a picture of the possibilities of what's about to happen this fall.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the most stark things about this post, if I understand what she was saying, is that she found time to run, mm-hmm. even though mm-hmm. work got busier. Mm-hmm. So what's the number one problem with people running? Well, it's motivation, but it's usually the motivation and problem is time. Mm-hmm. I don't have time
sure.
to run. And here she is having to do more, but still finding time to run. We can find time to run. Mm-hmm. If we want to, and that's what it comes down to. And sometimes you need that motivation to want to. Mm-hmm. And she got that motivation through the folks in Run Club. And it's funny how we get motivated. You know, I'm motivated right now because the Olympic trials are on. That's a different kind of motivator, but it motivates yeah. me. I want to get out there. I did double threshold workouts yesterday. I'm like, I want to get out there and do some stuff, right? Because it's just, I want to do more. And we're all motivated by something different. And the truth is that there's something out there for everybody. Mm-hmm. Now, Run Club is a great way to be motivated. But for some people, that's not the exact motivation they may want. But there's something out there. You know, I've watched a couple of documentaries recently, running documentaries. I watched a documentary of a guy running a 250-mile race in the Arizona desert. It was interesting, mm-hmm. right? But it was, this guy wasn't, he's not like this big professional runner. He's a pretty good runner, but nothing really special. And it was fun to watch. There's something out there for everybody is what yeah. I'm saying. And you can find it. So if you're saying, I can't get motivated, you're just not trying hard enough to find it.
Sure.
Because it's there.
You're choosing right? not to.
Yeah. That's right, yeah. Trivia question from last week. What is the longest event contested on the track? It's funny that this came up when it did because somebody had posted, I don't know if you saw the question on the Facebook group that asked, why is it sometimes called the 10,000 meters and sometimes it's called the 10K? Mm. Have you ever noticed that before?
No.
Well,
it's the same thing, right?
It is the same thing. It's the same distance. Sure. 10,000 meters is 10 kilometers.
Yeah.
But we call the track race 10,000 meters while we call a road race a 10K.
Never knew that.
Yeah. And it's a way for the running community to distinguish the difference between them. So it's pretty cool.
I learned something today, Dean.
Yeah.
Good job.
So the 10,000 meters is 25 laps on the track. It's a long way. It's a lot of laps on the track. 6 miles, 376 yards. You know, back in the day, they used to have the 6 mile run on the track for about 20 years. That was a big thing. Mm-hmm. And then they went to the 10K. In the U.S., I think we tend to think the metric system is something relatively new, especially if you're my age. Mm-hmm. We got this feeling that the metric system is something that came out in the 70s or something. But the truth is that the 10,000 meters has been contested in the Olympics since 1912.
Really?
Yeah. So the meters have been around for a long time. The metric system has been around for a long time. Of course, women didn't run 10,000 meters until 1988 because the longest they ran in the Olympics was 3,000 meters because it was thought that women shouldn't run that far. That sounds so crazy now, doesn't it?
So let me ask you a question because I'm just now remembering this. Because, you know, I watch every waking minute of the Olympic trials.
I know you do.
You know that. But I saw that one of Lane's buddies, one of his old triathlon friends, Davis Bove, was doing the Olympic trials.
He was in the 1500.
Yeah, how did he do? I know he was training with, was it Craig Ingles?
Yeah.
He was training with him. How did he do?
He didn't make it out of the first round. He was close. He was very close. He ran well. Right. Yeah. He ran a pretty good race. Craig Ingles made the final.
Really?
Yeah. He was so excited to make the final.
Yeah.
Gosh, that was cool. But Davis did a good job. He ran well.
Yeah. For a triathlete, I mean, you know.
Well, and I'm going to tell you what, the 1500 is just, it's just loaded.
Yeah.
That we got so, on any other year, he would have at least made it to the semifinals.
Really?
Any other year. But,
wow.
But this, yeah. Well, in the 10,000 meters, Joshua Cheptegei is the world record holder from Uganda. He's run 26:11. That's incredible. 2:13:05 5Ks back to back is just unbelievable. The American record is held by Grant Fisher, who has just won the Olympic trials. Grant has run 26:33. I think there's only been four guys that have broken 27 in the United States. You got Grant, and then Galen Rupp was the first one to do it. Woody Kincaid and Nico Young both did it this year. And it just so happens that Grant, Kincaid, and Young, those are the three guys going to the Olympics. So hopefully we've got a shot at the Olympics. And of course, when you go and you look at the top 25 times all time, they're all East Africans almost. Hmm. Not quite all, but probably 20 out of the 25. It's crazy. The interesting thing about the 10,000, it's the only race where it's just a single race. All the other races in the Olympics, there are qualifying races for. Even the 5K, you have to run a qualifying race to get into the final.
Mm-hmm.
But in the 10K, they just load everybody up on the track, and that could be 40 people. It's a crowded race. The interesting thing too about the 10,000 meters versus the 10K is the 10,000 meters on the track has always been faster than a 10K road run. Always. It's always been that way. You're usually faster on the track because it's controlled, it's flat, there's no hills. But recently, over the past few years, that's not necessarily the case. You know why?
Mm-mm.
Shoes.
Mm.
The shoes have made the 10K on the road as fast as the 10K on the track. And so you're not allowed.
It really shines the light on the shoes.
It really does.
You can see it. You can see it there.
Yep. And you're not allowed to use those shoes on the track.
I didn't know that.
That's right. Yeah. Wow. A world athletic event, you're not. Now, the NCAA, you can.
So, I must have missed the 10K on the track in the Olympic trials because, you know, I watched the rest of the Olympic trials. Anyway, I'm just kidding. So is there any kind of lap out rule on the 10K on the track? I mean, because that's what, 25 laps?
Yep. There is no.
Wow. So it's that crowded the whole time.
Yes. Well, and when you think about it, the qualifying times to get in are stringent. I mean, you got to be really fast to get in. So there's not a ton of lapping going on.
Really?
Yeah. Because you got to be fast to get in there.
So you're constantly fighting for that inside lane.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because, I mean, in a 10K, if you're one lane out, that's a long way extra that you're running.
Yeah, if you run the whole way that way. Yeah,
so
for sure.
I would think everybody would be constantly fighting for that inside spot. Even if there are a couple people back.
Yeah,
it would be worth it to stay on that line.
Yeah, you know, they had that that race here recently. I'm trying to remember the name. The 10, I think it was called. And there was a bunch of really good 10,000-meter runners in that race. And they were so – they got spread out. They were one single file line for like 30. There were like 30 guys who were all one right behind another because none of them want to run the extra distance.
Sure.
And that's kind of the way a lot of these things end up. So – I don't know. 10,000 meters, longest race in the Olympics.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
All right, we're back, and we're going to share a story, and I still know there's other people out there who haven't written us their story yet, so don't be shy. If that's your thing, that maybe you're just shy. Maybe that's the reason you haven't shared your story yet. Well, just get over that and write your story and send it in, because we need to hear it, and we want to share it because somebody else out there needs to hear it. So somebody brought up something on the Facebook page I thought was cool. And the idea of bucket list items. Is there a bucket list race? Do you have any bucket list races that you want to run?
I don't know that I do. I mean, I'm not a bucket list guy, really.
Yeah.
I say that. I mean, yeah. I don't think my bucket list has anything fitness-wise in it.
Okay.
So yeah. I think I have goals sometime, like I'm kicking around the idea, you know what I'm kind of kicking around, but I wouldn't put that in my bucket list because, you know, half of me really doesn't want to do it.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, because I think anything you're torn about, you know, because what I'm kicking around, that would be torturous.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know that falls in a bucket list category for me. I don't know. What about you?
Well, I have to do the 100-miler now.
Sure.
It was a bucket list item, but now it's even more so because I failed the first time. So, but you know, I've always wanted to run the New York Marathon and the Chicago Marathon. Mm-hmm. I've always thought those would be cool to run. So I'd like to run those at some point. It's just not been possible in the past because I just haven't been able to run a fall marathon.
Sure.
And I don't know if that's going to change a lot anytime soon. We'll see. But also, I think probably I would like to run in some of the national parks, I think would be cool. Mm-hmm. That I've never run in. I've been to several, but haven't run because it feels weird saying, hey, Debbie, can you just kind of sit around for an hour while I go for a run in the park? Mm-hmm. So typically I don't, but I would like to.
Sure.
And then, you know, I just recently got a chance to run in Central Park. Mm-hmm. That was really cool. That was definitely something I had always wanted
to do. You know, Travis ran there day before yesterday.
He did. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. I've run in Golden Gate Park. I've run in Forest Park in St. Louis. I've run in Piedmont Park in Atlanta. So I've run a lot of parks. So that's a pretty cool thing to check off some of those. And there's some other famous parks that'd be fun to run in. But maybe the thing, if I've got one bucket list item that I've thought about a number of times, but have never really thought about it seriously, it's probably the rim-to-rim-to-rim run in the Grand Canyon. So you start on the south rim, you run over to the north rim, and then you turn around and you run back. It's 42 to 48 miles, depending on who you listen to. And that's...
Who was just recently talking about that?
I don't know, but
I've always
thought that would be a really, really cool thing to do.
Yeah.
So a lot of people will do rim to rim, where they'll run from one to the other. That just doesn't seem like enough.
Didn't Ryan Hall do it with the water tanks? He did rim to rim with the water tanks.
Did he?
Yeah. The big. Wow. I don't know how much those weigh a piece. They're 50 pounds or so on each arm.
Man, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's got to be tough. Wow. Well, let's get to this week's story. I love this story from Hope Reagan. Have you ever been chased by a dog while you're out running?
Yeah, I have.
Probably all of us, right? And this is not just a country thing. I think, you know, a lot of people think, well, people get chased by dogs in the country, but, you know, you don't do that in the city. I've been chased by a dog in Atlanta, so I know it happens. In fact, it wasn't far from Piedmont Park when it happened. This one's called Dog Days of Summer. It's mid-July in White House, Texas. The late afternoon sun still hangs in the sky, beaming down its relentless heat. I'm sitting on my front porch, waiting for my friend Dee to arrive so we can go for a run. As I sit here, I look across our front yard at my neighbor's longhorns grazing in the pasture. What a sight to see every day in the Lone Star State. We live in the last house in the city limits. We have 5 acres and also have farm animals. Well, basically, it's a petting zoo. On this particular day, Dee is meeting me at my house. We're going to run a rural neighborhood close by, then loop around and head into town. Dee is a neighbor, a fellow running buddy, and a workout partner. We have kids the same age that go to the same school, and we both work in the corporate world. Dee is also a fairly new Christian. So, we always have lots to chat about during our runs together. As we're running through the rural neighborhood, our conversation is about prayer. Dee is telling me that it's difficult for her to pray out loud in front of people. She explains that she feels her words are not elaborate and she doesn't know quite what to say when other people's words seem so beautiful and eloquent when they pray. At that moment, a pack of 5 huge dogs came running up behind us and literally were on our tails. I had seen this pack of dogs before chasing the longhorns, so I knew they were not well-behaved or nice dogs. The dogs were not doing anything, but I was scared enough that the hairs on my arms were standing straight up. I began to pray out loud, "Lord Jesus, make these dogs go away. In the name of Jesus, make these dogs go away right now." And do you know what happened? They all turned around and went their own way. I turned to face my friend Dee and said, "Now, that's how prayer works. It doesn't have to be elaborate. It doesn't have to be fancy. It just needs to be a conversation between you and the Lord. Tell Him what's on your heart and have faith and believe that He hears you and will answer your prayers when it's in His will." Dog days of summer and a shepherd. Now it's late August, and there is no escaping the Texas heat. On this day, Dee, myself, and another friend, Kate, are going to run a 6-mile loop around Lake Tyler. We're hoping to catch a nice breeze off the lake to help keep us somewhat cool. This is a loop we've run many times before. It features woods, beautiful homes with manicured grounds, and even tiny rustic fishing cabins. As we start our run and approach the first house on our 6-mile loop, a beautiful white sheepdog with long ringlets runs out to the road to greet us. I've never seen this dog before. He is friendly, so we pet him and encourage him to go back home. But he's having no part of going home and continues to join us on our 6-mile run. The sheepdog and I have a good pace going, and we're running about 100 yards in front of my two friends. We're about half to the halfway point when this huge, black, ugly dog comes running out of the woods straight towards me. The sheepdog immediately steps in between me and this other dog. This beautiful sheepdog held his ground, and a big, black, ugly dog backed off, turned around, and ran straight back into the woods. We all continued on and finished our run. Don't you just love the way God works? His work doesn't have to be fancy or elaborate. Sometimes He just sends a sheepdog to be our shepherd, to guide us on the right path and to keep us safe.
That's a great story.
Every runner knows something about dogs.
Yeah.
And everybody's got their way of dealing with them, I guess.
Yeah. You know, there's one just around the corner up here. Anytime somebody goes with me, I have to warn them about it because you round this curve and there is a ginormous German Shepherd on a front porch, and he's huge and he's loud, and he comes sprinting at you, and he gets to you and he starts wagging his tail. He wants you to pet him.
Yeah.
So I have to warn anybody that goes with me, like, look, you're gonna think your life's about to end, but it's not. This dog is really nice. And so the dog's coming and they're like, are you sure? Like, yes.
And German Shepherds don't have any problem getting up close.
No. But I've learned through the years, I don't know how you do it. You know, we all have the way we deal with dogs. But usually if a dog's running at me, I've learned that if you just whistle, like, come here, boy, you know, like you're wanting to pet him, a lot of times you'll see that tail start wagging.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, you'll see that it doesn't faze him.
Yeah.
And that's when I pick up a stick or a rock. And a lot of times you pick up a rock or a stick, that's all they need to see.
Yeah.
Because usually those dogs have been hit by sticks and rocks before, you know, because they chase after people. But
well, and you don't even have to pick one up. All you got to do is act like you're picking one up.
Well, yeah.
And they'll turn around.
Yeah, you've talked about that before. Yeah.
My favorite dog story is one time when I was running and I was over there near the fish hatchery there in Cahutta. Yeah. And coming down off the hill there at the fish hatchery was this dog that was running after, like you're talking about, sprinting full speed. It was a pit bull. And I'm there and I'm like, I can't run away. There's no way I can get away from this dog. And so I stopped and this pit bull keeps running toward me and he is sprinting. He's going all out and he's running as hard as he can. And he's coming up to me and he's barking and he's being loud and I'm shouting at him and he's not turning around. He just keeps coming. And I am at this point, I'm like, oh my gosh, this could be it. This could be the run in that I've never had before. And here it comes. And this dog runs all the way up to me. And he gets to me and rolls over on his, on top of my feet. He rolls over on his back, wants me to scratch his belly. I was terrified for a few seconds there, but this dog was, he just wanted to be petted. And so, I've never seen the dog since, so I don't know whose dog it was.
So let's get a little education out here. So, because the boys and I actually talked about this just not too long ago. Have you ever really thought about, because I have, you know, when I've had dog, that German Shepherd, when it came at me the first time, this is one of those things that's good to think about, not in the moment. Have you ever thought about how to handle a dog should it actually be mean and it lunges at you? I mean, to me, I've always felt like I could take them if I could get them in a headlock.
Yeah.
And I know this is probably a little gruesome to be talking about on here, but it's, I mean, it could really happen.
Yeah.
You know, have you ever thought about how you would handle it if they were really mean and aggressive and they're going to make that lunge at you?
My thought has always been to just punch them in the head, right in between the eyes as hard as I could. Yeah. That's always been my thought. But
see, I've always thought about the headlock. If I could get them in a headlock, I could maybe stop what's coming.
Yeah. That makes sense.
But I don't know. Thank God I've never been in that city. I felt like I was going to be there before.
Yeah.
But... yeah, I had one kind of like Hope one time where this dog was running at me and out of the blue comes probably one of his buddies and tackles him and then they start fighting and I'm just getting on out of there because I don't want their focus to be on me.
That's right.
I think we've all got dog stories.
Absolutely. Well, I hate it when a dog follows me. She talks about this dog that followed her because you don't want to take that dog away from their home because the further away from their home, you feel like it's dangerous for them. And so you don't want that. But at the same time, I don't want to stop my run and go find where this dog goes. And so I've had dogs follow me for as many as 10 miles.
Oh, yeah.
And it's crazy. Yeah. I don't like the ones that want to run in between your legs, though.
Yeah.
God, those scare you to death. Matthew 6:6-8 says, "But you, when you pray, go into your room, and when you have shut your door, pray to your Father who is in a secret place. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly. And when you pray, do not use vain repetitions as the heathen do, for they think they will be heard for their many words. Therefore, do not be like them, for your Father knows the things you have need of before you ask him."
You know, I think sometimes we get hung up on the vain repetitions. Because honestly, a lot of times when I pray, a lot of the statements I make are the same. Mm-hmm. But I think it doesn't say don't use repetitions. You use vain repetitions. And I always kind of compare that. You know, we have these terms of endearment that you use for your wife or your kids or them to you. And a lot of times it's the same thing, but we want to hear that. I mean, I want to hear my kids say the things that they say to me. Even though it's the same exact thing they say every night, I long for that. And I think God's the same way.
Sure.
Now, if it's empty or vain, then that's a problem. But I think we can all fall into the trap of Hope's friend and that we feel somehow inadequate. There's nothing inadequate about me talking to you. Mm. In the same way, there's nothing inadequate about me talking to God. No matter what the word, He knows our heart.
Yep.
And a lot of times, you know, I could be fumbling my words trying to talk to you, but you know my heart.
Right.
And I think that's the main thing is, where's your heart at?
That's exactly right.
And it doesn't matter the words you say. I mean, some of the most impactful prayers that I've ever heard are
not well worded.
Not well worded. It's a true, it's somebody truly trying to talk to God.
Yep.
And they're trying to find the words, and there's a lot of heart in that.
For sure.
Yeah. Eloquence. Now, can an eloquent prayer be a great prayer and what God wants to hear? Yes. So we're not casting judgment on either side, but the point is, you don't have to be eloquent when talking to God, even in front of people. We're not praying for people.
Yep.
We're not praying for them to hear it. We're praying for God to hear it.
Yep. And the one other thing that we haven't addressed here is this whole idea of in secret. You know, I've heard people argue that, well, you know, why do people even pray in public when the Bible says you should pray in private? Mm-hmm. And that's completely missing the point, mm-hmm. right? The whole idea is, again, it goes back to your heart. Mm-hmm. Why are you praying? If you're praying to be seen,
sure,
then that's not good. God doesn't sure. want that. It, you know, the Bible talks about the religious leaders of the day who widen their phylacteries mm-hmm. and lengthen their tassels so that they could make their prayers sound all that much more fantastic. Mm-hmm. And God doesn't care for that. He doesn't like showboating. Right. He wants to hear from your heart.
Sure.
Romans 8:26. Likewise, the Spirit also helps in our weaknesses, for we do not know what we should pray for as we ought, but the Spirit himself makes intercession for us with groanings which cannot be uttered.
I think that kind of goes to what I was saying about mm-hmm. sometimes you're trying to find the words to get out.
Yep.
And you can sense and feel the Holy Spirit. Yeah, I'm almost doing it right now. It's almost like you can't put into words what God's telling you,
yeah,
or what you feel like you should be asking of God.
And I've always felt when I feel in like I'm in those moments where I feel like I don't know what to ask for, and I'm stumbling on my words like mm-hmm. that you almost feel like you're closer to God in those prayers, because you feel like God really is putting these words and thoughts in my mind, regardless of whatever they may be.
Sure.
I don't know, but I think God, what the prayers that God wants to hear are not the fantastic prayers that he wants to hear the prayer in church, you know, in front of other people. He wants to hear the prayer that I say at the close of my Sunday school class.
Sure.
That's great. But what the prayers I think that God really wants to hear are the ones you say while you're in line at Walmart. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that you speak all throughout the day mm-hmm. because God just wants to feel like you're connected to him all day long.
Because prayer is not bowing your head and clasping your hands.
Right.
That is a posture. That is not prayer. Prayer is simply a conversation.
Amen.
Yeah.
Yep. Psalms 78:72. So he shepherded them according to the integrity of his heart and guided them by the skillfulness of his hands. Hmm. To me, this verse is kind of saying God's going to do what God wants to do. Mm-hmm. You know, he chose Judah. He chose David. He made David a shepherd for the express purpose of creating this idea that Jesus is our shepherd, right? Mm-hmm. All of this stuff goes, God writes just a beautiful story
sure.
with all of this stuff. There's places in the Bible too that says God will not be mocked, right? And a lot of non-Christians like to make fun of the stories in the Bible. God's not swayed by any of that. He doesn't care how much people do that, right? It's God's going to write his story the way he wants to write his story. And that's, to me, that's what it means, that the integrity of the heart. We think about integrity in our world today, and gosh, we've messed that word up. Like, we have a lot of words, haven't we? Because, mm-hmm. You know, we talk about integrity when it comes to a politician. That's God's integrity is completely different. Mm-hmm. You know, And that we're talking about real integrity here. We're talking about God is saying, I know the path, and this is the path I'm going down, and it doesn't really matter about anything else coming in from the sides, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, we all have to be careful of prescribing motives to people. It's like, you know, somebody asking us if we think somebody's saved. There's things that we have no business even weighing in on.
Yeah.
The point is, you need to listen to what God is saying in your life. It doesn't matter how you pray. It doesn't matter what other people think. You need to listen to what's going on in your heart and in your spirit, because God will confirm if that's the right way to pray.
Yep.
Or if you're walking with true integrity, regardless of what society sees, you got to tune in to what God is saying in your heart. And that needs to be our true north.
Amen.
That's hard. I mean, sometimes, because I'm as guilty as anybody. I start to, I wonder what they think. Even though I'm not as bad as many, I think me and you're pretty much, we don't care what other people think about a lot of things. But that can get us in a lot of trouble.
It can.
And trying to worry about what other people are thinking. We need to listen to what that small voice in our spirit is saying.
Yeah.
Because that's the truth.
Yep. Absolutely.
Hurts sometimes, but it's the truth.
Mm. A question. Do you notice the little things God does for you in the moment that it happens? And can you recognize it?
I think we just talked. I mean, a lot of times we chalk it up to coincidences.
Yeah.
But there's no coincidences. I mean,
no. You know,
I'm sure there's lots of things I miss, but I feel like, I call them those God winks, you know, those moments where God's like, this is right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. There's two sides of this, because I honestly believe that God, here's something that I have. I'm really bad about not looking at my schedule and missing something coming up. You know, that's why you're laughing at me. Like yesterday, you sent a text out and said, hey, don't forget today's meeting is earlier than normal, right? And it was perfectly timed for me. I mean, literally perfectly.
And I don't even know why I sent that, because I usually don't send a text about that.
I know. That's I know crazy. You don't. That's, yeah. But that's my whole point, is that if you would have sent that 10 minutes earlier, I don't know if I'd have seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you'd have sent it, well,
5 minutes later.
Yeah. It was perfectly timed. And it was for me. That's why you sent it. It was for me. Because
I don't know that it was, honestly. I was sitting there ready for the meeting. I thought, I'm going to send it to
you. No, I'm not saying that was your intention. I'm saying that was God's intention.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Because this has happened to me literally thousands of times in my life.
Sure.
Where I need to be reminded of something. And it's, God knows my heart, that I'm not forgetting about things on purpose, and that I have every intention of following through on things. But he puts these things in my life that will remind me of this thing that's coming.
Mm-hmm.
It's over and over and over. I mean, this is one incident. This just happened to be the latest, but and to me, that's God's way of weaving the world together in a way that helps overcome some of my weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side of that coin, I think we sometimes have to be careful to not to say that everything that happens is because, I'm trying to think of one. God coordinates everything, but not everything that happens in your life is because God wanted it to be there. Does that make sense?
Right. That's what I call prescribing motives.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something good happens that we wanted to do. This is, I don't know. We might be stepping into uncharted waters here, but yeah. I mean, I'll put it on me. Sometimes there's things that happen that I was wanting to do, and I probably did it without even talking to God about it. And possibly times that that may not even have been in God's will. It was in Mitchell's will.
Yeah.
And I give God a nod, and I feel like sometimes God's going, I know part of that, buddy. Yeah. You know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I do. It's kind of like if God prescribes everything for us, then we have no free will.
Sure.
Right? But we do have free will. Right? And so
it
works. Yeah. So anyway, it's kind of a little bit of a dilemma.
Let's don't start down that path.
Yeah, let's not.
But yeah, I mean, but even in those times, because I can think of a few right now of those exact moments. And even when I kind of say, thank you, God, for that, and I can almost, that's why I say you got to listen to your spirit. That's the true truth.
Yeah.
There's been those times where I can sense God is like, no, don't go there.
Yep.
I had nothing to do with that. That's not in my will.
Mm-hmm.
Made you happy. And a lot of times there's really nothing wrong. It's not really a bad thing, but it doesn't have to be a bad thing to be outside of God's will.
That's right. Yeah.
Walking down the sidewalk and not talking to that person on the sidewalk is not necessarily a bad thing, but was God prompting you to talk to that person?
Yeah.
So then all of a sudden walking down the sidewalk turns into a bad thing if you don't do what God's calling. I don't know.
I like it. That's good. Yeah. Another question. What is the power of prayer? The power of prayer isn't in the words you utter. It's not about what you pray or even how you pray. Prayer can be defined as talking to God, but it is much more than that. Prayer is an act of worship that glorifies God. Through living a life of prayer, we communicate with the source of and the purpose of our life. So she asks a question and then she answers it. I like that.
Yeah.
I just agree with everything she says there. I mean, it's what more can you say than what she just said? That's what it is, right? I used to have a Sunday school teacher who used to talk about, she called them breath prayers. Breath prayers to her were the ones where, like I was just talking about, breath prayers were while you're driving in traffic and you're just kind of talking to God while you're driving in traffic. It's the ones, again, where you're at the grocery store. It's these things where you're just communicating with God through your daily routine through the day. And she used to call those breath prayers, which I don't know why that term, but I thought it was an interesting term and I'll never forget it. Because I feel like if we are connected to God the way he wants us to be connected to him, that's the way things are going to be. It's going to be a conversation all day long, right? Mm-hmm. And if we're not doing that, then I don't know how healthy our relationship is with God.
Yeah, I've always talked about, if you ever want to see God make an impact in somebody's life, go look at, I've always pointed to my dad. It was an overnight thing. It was an overnight thing. It was a moment-to-moment thing. His life transformed. There's people you can look at. But on the subject of prayer, I've always talked about, I don't know that I've always talked about it, this has always been my example of the power of prayer, is think back, if you're a believer, and think back to a time, and I can think back to several, because this has happened. These are the prayers that I can point to where I know prayer works, where you're just in knots about something. I mean, there has been times where I'm just beside myself about an issue and I'm going to fix it. God is the last thing on my mind. Mitchell's got to take charge of this and he's got to fix it and it ain't getting fixed, and you begin to pray to God and you're like, God, why do I feel like this? Why? This could be something so, I'm a mountain out of a molehill guy. I can take something that one little offense and I blow it up into that person wants to kill me and, rob everything in my house. Anyway, but you get in these knots and you start to realize it's like God gives you an outside perspective of what you're looking like. I mean, this is ridiculous, but you can't get rid of that. And you're trying to in your own power and it never fails. I will ultimately get worn down by my own self and I'll go to God And a lot of times it's just in desperation. God, take this away from me.
Mm-hmm. Boom.
That quick.
Yeah.
That quick.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing changed. Nothing in my circumstances, environment, the people around me, nothing changed except my focus.
Yeah.
Because when you pray, your focus is forced to change. My focus 1 minute prior was on the situation, what that person had done to me, what those other people were saying. But when I turned my focus to God, you see how ridiculous it is.
Yeah.
And God acknowledges that with you, but then he takes it from you. A lot of times God ain't going to give you if you don't ask.
That's right.
If I never asked for him to take that from me, I'd probably still be stewing about a lot of these things. And that's why I don't understand how people who don't have Christ, I don't understand how they do it. I just don't.
Well, it tells you why the world is so angry, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Last question. What is the significance of Jesus being our shepherd? He is the only one who can truly protect and save his people, his flock. Hmm. Again, she's kind of answering her own question. Now, I think the significance of Jesus being our shepherd is that we can't really get along without him, kind of to what you were just saying. So many people, their lives are turned upside down because they don't have somebody to go to, because they don't know who and don't have a relationship with Christ. And it's just like the sheep in the field, right? The sheep in the field can get along without the shepherd for a while.
Mm-hmm.
They can eat the grass that's there in the field. They can, you know, they can get away with it for a while. But when a crisis happens, they got to have a shepherd.
Well, I guess that's why this analogy is one that Jesus used so much, is if you really understand sheep, they're skittish, mm-hmm. and they're paranoid, and they're just like we are. So many, they're just like I am in those moments. And when a shepherd comes in, you know, that's the whole thing about a shepherd, that sheep are smart enough to know, they know the voice mm-hmm. of the one protecting them. They sense the presence. You know, a shepherd doesn't have to be visible to sheep. They can sense it. You know, there's sheep across the road here, across the road from my driveway. And sometimes those sheep will be going nuts. I can hear them all the way from my house, and it's a half mile to those sheep. And I'm convinced that's when the owner's gone.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably like a little 2-acre fenced in area. But most of the time you don't even hear him. And I'm convinced, well, he must be home.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think, yeah, we're like, we freak out easily.
Yeah.
Over the smallest things. But if you'll just talk to God.
Yeah.
Just talk to him.
Amen.
He'll take it from you.
It is so hard to stay on track as a runner or a walker. The world also makes it difficult to stay on track spiritually, too. For pennies a day, Upward Sports Run for God Run Club can make both of these journeys more fun and much easier. Join the Run for God Run Club and get access to training plans, videos, and the best group of active Christians you will find anywhere. Go to runforgod.com and sign up today.
Here's a question for you. Do you think you need to break in running shoes?
I don't know. I just got two new pair, and I've been wearing them just walking around. Maybe you don't have to, but I still do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, back in the day, you kind of had to because they were real stiff. And
sure.
But nowadays, with the materials they make shoes out of, I don't know that you have to do that anymore. But now, I will say this, though. If you have a new running shoe, if you're trying a new style,
mm-hmm.
I think there's a difference between that and running in the same shoe you've been running in. You know, you just get a fresh pair of the same shoes you've been wearing.
How good does that feel?
Oh, it feels great. Man, that's awesome.
I mean, my shoes, it finally hit me the other day. I was starting to get some blisters, and Holly's like, how old are your shoes? And you think, you know, I've got two pairs of shoes. I rotate them. I'm good. Until you realize these shoes are 2 years old.
Yeah.
I'd been running them for walking in them for 2 years. And so I got me some new ones. And, oh, man, it's just like... so comfortable now.
There was the problem.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing that I want to get to, though, is that if you buy a new pair of shoes, and I've gone through this several times recently because I've been trying to find my new shoe because they discontinued my old one. And you got to be careful with a new pair of shoes. You can't take a brand new pair of shoes. They might be broken in, but if you haven't run in that style before, you got to be careful with it. Because mm-hmm. I have had situations, not that I went through a week of having to run very little, because I had a new pair of shoes and I went out and ran a long run in them and I hurt myself mm-hmm. because they didn't work for me. Mm-hmm. So be careful with that. That's the one thing is, and then the other thing too is when you do get a new pair of shoes, or when you're buying a new pair of shoes, if your shoes don't feel perfect on your feet in the shoe store, don't buy those shoes mm-hmm. for running.
Sure.
Because whatever the problem is going to be multiplied right. while you run. I had the weirdest thing. One of the pairs of shoes that I wore, probably the most comfortable pair of shoes that I've tried over the last few months, they're too soft. I never would have guessed. They actually make it feel like I have a bruise on the bottom of my foot when mm-hmm. I run in them. Because they're too, the only thing I can figure is it's because they're too soft, maybe too flexible. I don't know, but something about them makes them not good for me. Hmm. And so, again, just because they feel good doesn't mean that's gonna take care of it either. But I also want to talk about how your shoes fit. You know, one of the things when I was in college, I worked at a running shoe store. Well, it was a sports shoe store. And I saw person after person wear their shoes too small, and they would argue with me that this is the size I wear. And I would check them and I'd be like, that shoe's too small. And he'd be like, this is the way I like them. Mm. Let me say this for those out there listening. I don't care how you like them. mm-hmm. I don't know if that's still a problem today like it was back then. Your shoes, you need to be able to put a thumb's width between the end of your toe.
A big fat thumb.
Yeah. The end of your toe and the end of the shoe, you should be able to stick your thumb in between there. And if you can't, they are too small.
Yeah.
Period. Not they might be too small. They are too small. And so be real careful with that. Your feet swell when you run. It's really important. And the other thing, too, that you have to be careful with shoes, too, is making sure there's enough room for your feet to splay. Mm-hmm. You know, when you land, part of the shock absorption, everybody thinks the shoes are there for shock absorption. And to some degree they are, but your feet are made for shock absorption.
Sure.
But they have to be able to splay out when they land. So if your shoe is too tight, that goes to how you tie your shoes mm-hmm. as well. If your shoe is too tight and that doesn't happen, you're asking for injuries.
Yeah.
So be careful.
Yeah, and
that.
On the swelling part, I've learned an example here since I've been walking past couple years. For all you walkers out there, you understand this. When you go walk for any extended period of time, what do your hands do? They swell. Mm-hmm. I mean, I walked 16 miles one day last week
mm-hmm.
in the Florida heat. I just felt like walking, felt like Forrest Gump. Anyway, I come back and if I would have had my wedding band on, there's no way I would have gotten it off. But, mm-hmm. and I like that. You know, you see a lot of ladies, especially, they'll put their hands up when they're walking, almost like they're, you know, worship song or something. But they don't like I like the feel. I like having things that let me know I did something. Anyway, that's exactly what your feet do.
That's right.
You know, it's not hugely noticeable, but when you're talking, I mean, a thumb width, that's not a huge margin. You got to leave room in there, because then that's what, you know, you start getting the black toenails and all that kind of stuff. And most people wear their shoes too small.
Yeah. They do. Yeah. Another question is about rotating shoes. Should you rotate? I've talked to a lot of people who think you should have two pairs of running shoes and you should rotate them. I don't necessarily think that's true. I don't think it's a bad thing either, right? No. And what I tend to do is I have a pair of shoes that I like to run trail runs on. And I have a different pair of shoes I like to run on the road with. Mm-hmm. And so, in a sense, I rotate shoes because of that. But but mostly, and then I've got a different pair of shoes that I like to do like track workouts in. That's a little bit different than just rotating shoes. Some people say, well, you need two pairs of shoes and they last longer if you do that. Well, they don't last longer. Right. They still last the same number of miles.
Right.
It may be longer before you have to replace them, but now you got to replace two pairs instead of one pair.
I'll do it this time of year, especially because I'm walking every day now. Because, you know, this time of year, your feet sweat more than you think they do.
Yeah.
When you take your sock off, your foot's not that wet, but all that moisture has dissipated into your shoes, and they may not feel wet, but they are.
Yep.
So I alternate shoes for that reason, is just to let that one pair get good and dry before, you know, because it may not be anything that affects it, but if you don't let them get dried out really good and you just keep sweating and keep sweating, then it smells like a skunk.
Yeah. Well, you know you know what I do? This is awesome. This is one of the greatest tips you're ever going to hear, okay? I have a shoe dryer, and I leave it plugged in 24 hours a day.
Really?
And when I get through running, I put my shoes on my shoe. Now, it doesn't blow out. It's not, you know, it's a real gentle heat that it blows out. But I put my shoes on that when I get through. That's where I put my shoes. My shoes used to smell so bad.
Yeah.
Now, nothing.
See, I always thought that's what the heat and air vent was for.
Yeah, well, same thing.
Upside down,
it's really the same principle.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We're on a slab now, so we don't have that anymore.
Yeah, and then when you replace your running shoes, you know, a lot of people say 300 to 500 miles. Well, it depends on the person.
Yeah.
I there's a girl that I know who has to replace hers more often than that. She's got to replace them every 200 miles because she just wears them out that fast. I probably get about 800 miles out of a pair of shoes. Most of them, not all, but some of them. I got a pair at home that the heel was kind of worn down, but the rest of the shoe was fine. The cushioning and everything was fine. So I got out some hot melt glue and I put some hot melt glue on the corner of the shoe there just to make them last longer.
I mean, your legs and your feet will tell you.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Well, it's a time for Dean's Thoughts, and that's a time when I share something that I've written about the intersection between running and faith. Well, do you like running into the wind? You know, most people instinctively say no, but you know what? During this time of year, it's not such a bad thing.
Yeah.
Well, that's not what this is about, but it's a thought. This is called Which Direction Are You Going? Running in the wind can be tough, especially when running directly into the wind. It can feel like we're almost running in place when faced with a particularly stiff gale. The studies confirm that there is an impact on your running speed when running into the wind. They further show that the faster you run, the more it affects your pace. So a person running 7-minute pace would be affected more than someone running 10-minute pace. But what happens when you turn around and run with the wind? Do you get the benefit of that tailwind in the same way you were slowed by the headwind? Yes and no. You do get a benefit from running with the wind. However, the benefit of running with the wind is not as substantial as the detrimental effect of running against the wind. So, if you're running on a track where you're alternating running with the wind and then against the wind, there is a net negative effect. There are other factors to consider, like the cooling effect of the wind, but overall, you are usually a more efficient runner when there is no wind, unless, of course, you're only going one direction. There would be a lot of math involved in figuring out just how much the wind would slow you down physically, but I also know that the wind can affect us mentally. It is critical to keep in mind that, first of all, you can't do anything about the wind other than perhaps draft behind someone else, if possible. Secondly, you must relax when running into the wind. We can waste more energy tensing up in frustration with the wind than the wind will take from us. I have a tendency to run faster when running into the wind. Why? Because I feel like I'm running too slow. So my auto response is to bear down a little harder. The problem is that the wind is not affecting me near as much as my brain is telling me. So be careful the next time you're running into the wind. Relax, and it will go much better. You ever feel like you're going the wrong way when you're running into the wind? You wish you could always run with the wind, but you can't. We all must run into the wind at times, and we're all going to wish we were going in the other direction sometimes. The disciples on the road to Emmaus were dejected. They had just witnessed what they thought was the most tragic thing they had ever seen. They had said they believed in everything that Jesus preached, but their actions told a different story. And in this case, they were walking away from where they should be. Of course, Jesus shows up and gets them back on track. But it begs a question. Have you ever felt like you were running against the wind or the wrong direction, but you weren't? These disciples were doing both in this case. They were walking away from Jerusalem, so they thought they were going with the wind, in other words, away from the embarrassment and disappointment, but the actual situation was the opposite. At the same time, they thought they were against the wind because they had lost Jesus, but they had not. They could not have been more wrong. So what did Jesus do with that? Well, he ultimately sent them out into the world to proclaim what Jesus had done. And we worry that our missteps disqualify us for speaking up about Jesus sometimes. This story should put that notion to bed. So when you're running against the wind, relax and things will go better for you. And when you make a spiritual mistake, relax, ask him to forgive you, and realize that God can use anything and anybody to tell his story.
There's a lot to unpack there, Dean. That's a good story.
the running against the wind thing is one of those things. As a coach, you always tried to minimize the what people were thinking about the wind. I kind of had this almost like a salesmanish spiel on the wind. It's like, oh, the wind, it hardly affects you at all, knowing that a pretty stiff wind on the track is pretty, it's going to slow you down.
So let me ask you though. So I agree that running into the wind, running with the wind does not offset running against the wind. But I would dare to say that that's not from a, it's because of the mental side, right? So let me ask you this. So if you took a robot and you put a big sail on it and you set it at 5 miles an hour and that robot drove into the wind, if there was no wind and you let it go one lap around the track and then you turn the wind up and there was a 5 mile an hour wind that it had to run into, but it also ran the same distance, it also traveled the same distance with the wind, would the time be the same? If there was no emotion, you don't think?
No, the studies show it. As a matter of fact, you can see it in your car gas mileage. When you're driving into the wind versus driving with the wind, you can see the difference in your gas mileage. You have to work harder to go into the wind. And the faster you go, the harder, the more detrimental it is. So again, like I was saying, if I'm running along at 7 minute pace, then running into the wind affects me more than it would if you're running at 10-minute pace.
Gosh, that just doesn't square in my mind.
But that's they've done studies.
Yeah.
On this to find that. And it's true. It's true. And again, that same thing goes when you're running with the wind. It helps you because there's not as much, it doesn't help you because it's pushing you. It helps you because there's not as much resistance. It's the lack of resistance. There is resistance.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I feel like the moments where I have ran with and against the wind, it's kind of like most people on a bike, they do hills the wrong way. You know, they try to power up a hill and then they coast the downhill. Well, that's not the fastest way to do it. The fastest way to do a hill on a bike is go a little bit easier uphill and use the downhill. Put your power in the downhill. But I feel like on running, people, they get demoralized when they're into the wind. And then when they get with the wind, they don't make it up. It's like they just back off and they enjoy the easy, where if they would have kept that intensity the same, both, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I
almost want to do a scientific project now.
Well, it's been done. They have
studies out
there.
Yeah, but it's not ours.
That's right. That's true.
I think we need to try that.
Now, I do seriously run faster when I'm running against the wind, which is crazy, right? And the reason why I do it is because in my brain, the wind is affecting me, and I've convinced myself that the wind is affecting me more than it actually is. Mm-hmm. Now, I stay relaxed. That's not necessarily an anxiety kind of thing. It's just that I also tend to run faster toward the end of a run because I feel like I'm slowing down as I go. So I tend to run faster. And it's all just, it's all up here. It's all in your brain.
I don't know if, so on a bike, because I know that they talk about this every year when the Tour de France is on, that the idea is you want to keep your heart rate consistent. So you see they get these guys, it appears that they're not going, I mean, obviously they're going hard up these mountains. But the look on their, the intensity of their body is pretty low.
Yeah.
It looks, because they're trying to keep their heart rate down. And then what happens when they get to the top? It's like everything in them is grimacing going down the backside because they're trying to keep the heart rate at the same, which is harder to do with less resistance.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think I see what you're saying.
Like if you're trying to keep a 130 heart rate.
Yeah.
Going up a mountain. That's easy to do.
Right? Is it? Doesn't seem like it to me, but.
Well, I mean, it's easier to get your heart rate up when there's a lot of resistance.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
It's harder to get your heart rate up when there's less resistance.
Oh, yeah, so going down.
So if they're trying to keep, what they want to do in cycling is keep a straight line on their heart rate. Because the ups and downs is what fatigues you, right?
Yeah. So they'll ride crazy hard downhill.
That's why they're doing trying 80 miles an hour down these mountains.
Yes. Yeah.
And I don't know.
That's an interesting thought. Yeah. Well, I don't understand the dynamic behind how you can have more wind resistance in your face and your body interprets that as resistance rather than I'm running faster. Because, you know, if you've got wind in your face, it should feel like you're running faster, right? But instead, it feels like you're running slower. Because the faster the wind is coming, the faster, you know, I mean, if there's no wind, the faster you run, the more wind you have. Right? So why do you interpret it differently than that? I don't know. That was just a thought.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah. I still contend, maybe scientifically, from a physiology perspective, what you're saying is right. But I think a ton of it's in your head.
Yeah, I do
for
too.
For sure.
That's kind of my point. Yep. So you have to relax. But anyway, the point I'm trying to make here is that, you know, we often don't know if we're going in the right or the wrong direction. And we're talking about this, the whole idea of the disciples here on the road to Emmaus, because they thought they were going the right way. They thought they were getting away from the tragedy that just happened. And the truth was they were going the opposite of the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And they should have been going back and toward Jerusalem rather than away from Jerusalem.
Kind of makes you, if you watch The Chosen, the intro where the fish is swimming and it turns.
Yeah.
And that's the way we are to be as followers of Christ. We should be swimming
toward
upwind, you know, against the grain.
Have you ever got lost while you're out running?
Hmm.
And not known which direction you should go? I mean, this has happened to me a lot. Like if I go out.
I don't think that's ever happened to me.
Really?
No.
Man, if I go out of town and I'm in a place I've never been before, I'm going to go out and I'm going to try to run. And a lot of times I'll try to make a loop somewhere.
Yeah.
And sometimes
I guess I'm more of an out and back.
A lot of times I do out and back, but sometimes I want to do a loop. And so you got to be careful with it. but anyway, the funny part about that is that at some point in time, you get out and you start to run. I remember running 10 miles for a cool down one time. It was supposed to be 3 in Gainesville, Florida. But the point is that what happens is I get lost and I start to get a little anxious when I realize I'm not sure if I'm in the place where I thought I was. And that anxiousness builds, right? And it builds and it builds. And then all of a sudden you recognize where you are and it all goes away. All that anxiousness, all that anxiety that you felt is all gone.
It's kind of like that prayer to God.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
It's a good metaphor there, Dean.
Yep. At some point in time, all you're looking for while you're out there running, you're trying to find the way back to where you were, is all you're looking for is comfort, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So you find that comfort.
That'll preach.
And then you know what happens? This is so us. Listen to this. So you find your comfort. Boom, I know where I'm at. Now you know what goes through my mind next? Oh, man, I wanted to run an extra couple of miles. I start to whine. As soon as I get comfortable, I start to whine.
That'll preach too. Yeah.
There is no better way to start the day than in the Word. Our Bible in a Year challenge is a great way to start the day in the Word as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. I also share running and walking tips each day, as well as encouraging quotes. Choose the self-paced challenge so that you can go at your pace. You must be a Run Club member for access to this exciting challenge. So, if you're not a member, sign up today and get started. If you are a member, what are you waiting for?
Every week, I share a reason why running and/or walking is so awesome. And here's a good one for this particular time of this particular year. It's a good way to get away from politics.
So we need to be running for the next 5 months straight. Yes. Basically is what you're saying.
Yes. You know, right now everything you see, it's politics on the news. That's all they talk, and it's just all the time. And it's running is a good escape from stuff like that.
What is it I saw today? As we're filming this, or as we're recording this, is the first presidential debate. And one of the news stations I clicked on, it said, I think the debate's at 9 o'clock tonight. And it said, 8 o'clock pregame show. And then like 10:30 postgame show. It's like,
yeah,
it's turned into these.
Yeah. Well, all I know is that the Olympic trials are on tonight. And so I don't know what's going to happen with the debate, but I ain't watching it. Well, I like the way they're doing the Olympic trials. They got the 4 days of competition, and they run through basically from qualifying to finals in these events. And then they have 2 days break, and then they have 4 more days, and they do different events. Like they did the 100, both men and women, up the first session, and then the second session they'll be doing the 200. That way they can double and they don't overlap.
So I flipped on the TV the other night. You just made me think of this because I'd forgot about it. I flipped on the TV, and this is how fast I go to sleep. I flipped on the TV when I got in the bed, and they were getting ready for one of the 100 meter whatever. It was the guys.
Yeah.
They were getting, I mean, they were filming, they were showing them come out. And I remember I didn't like Noah Lyles.
Yeah.
Everybody else walks out. He comes out basically doing cartwheels almost. And
yeah.
So that's where it was when I turned the TV on and I was asleep by the time they finished. That quick.
That's quick. That's quick.
Because yeah. I don't know who won that race. Who did win that race?
Noah Lyles.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was just out there showboating, and maybe that's just his personality.
He's a lot like Usain Bolt was. You know, I think he's friendly.
Usain Bolt was endearing. Is Noah Lyles that way?
I think he is. Okay. I think you watch him all the time, I think he is.
Because you could see the other guys lined up. They're like, oh my gosh, get back here on the line.
Yeah. I actually watched some of Bolt's old races recently. And that guy was so likable.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. Yeah.
He was just, gosh, he was so much fun.
He was confident, but he wasn't cocky.
Yeah.
There's a difference.
Yeah. Well, we talked about a lot of this stuff on a bonus podcast. Hopefully you heard that. But in case you didn't listen to him, a couple of things that happened. I think Mo, you know, she's a reigning Olympic champion in the 800 meters, and she did not make it into the Olympics because she fell down.
Oh, wow.
And it was a tragic thing. She was crying her eyes out. I don't think anybody's talked to her since. And she just doesn't want to talk, I guess. But it was one of those things where she hasn't run hardly at all this year because she had an injury she's trying to overcome, and she got a late start. And anyway, it was sad. Although Nia Akins looked good, so hopefully she'll be able to medal. But that was our best medal shot.
I listened to y'all's preview podcast, mm-hmm. and I think y'all were talking about the Florida girl. How did she do? Was it the girl from Florida?
The girl from Florida in what event? Oh, you're talking about Parker Valby.
Yep.
in the 5K.
How did she shake out?
She did really well. She finished fourth in the 5,000. Okay. But she
because one of y'all said y'all had her down for the 10K as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Yeah.
She has no kick. And so she's running with these other ladies. But basically what she did in the 5,000 is she said, I'm going to run the Olympic standard. The Olympic standard was 14:52. So she said, I'm going to run the Olympic standard. And if you guys want to come along and beat me in the end, what more power to you. But you're going to have to run that fast to beat me. And that's what she did. And she ran 14:51. And three of them were able to beat her in the end. But I thought that was the best way for her to run it. And yeah, she did it. And so it was good. Now I've said before that we're living in the age of the golden age of the 1500 meter runner. We had in the 1500 meters, ninth place in the final ran 334. The significance of 334 is that's what the Olympic trials record was before then.
Wow.
So eight guys broke the Olympic trials record, which is crazy. For them to be that good. Vincent Ciotti, who nobody talked about at all prior to the trials. I mean, I heard not a single peep about him possibly. And he missed being on the Olympic team by like 200ths of a second. It was that close. And he ran 331 and is not going to the Olympics.
That's crazy.
That's nuts. And then here, that's equivalent to a 348 mile that he ran. And he's not going to the Olympics. But here's the craziest thing, I think. The craziest thing is it is entirely possible that we could not win a medal in the Olympics as good as we are in that event, because that's how good the rest of the world is in that event. It's just incredible. I can't wait to see the Olympics. Now, just to be clear, I think we will win a medal, but there is, if we didn't, it wouldn't be a huge surprise, put it that way. You know, you got Josh Kerr and you got all those Scottish guys out there in Great Britain that are running really well. Jakob Ingebrigtsen, who seems to rarely lose. It's awesome. It's incredible. I can't wait to see it. And of course, in the 100-meter dash, I already mentioned, you know, Noah Lyles won for the men. That's the race that everybody talks about. That's the marquee race. It shouldn't be. It should be the 1500.
And I fell asleep.
Yeah, and you fell asleep. So, Sha'Carri Richardson won for the women.
Is she kind of mellowed out any?
Some.
Okay.
Some. I'm not a fan. Not a fan of hers.
Does she still wear the wig?
She didn't this time.
Because I know that was kind of a big thing when she took it off that one race.
Yeah, her fingernails are still about 4 inches long. But, yeah. You know, I'm not necessarily – I don't mind you being a little flamboyant. I mean, Noah Lyles is a little flamboyant. Flo-Jo, back in her day, she was flamboyant. But it's the way Sha'Carri that you do it.
Comes over as cocky, though.
It does. And, I hope she does well. We'll see. Fred Kerley made it to the Olympics again, which is crazy. Fred Kerley was the one who, I don't know if we talked about it on here, where he had this weird thing happen where he false started. It looked like he did it on purpose. And then he was running for ASICS, and the next day they dropped him. And so he's not running for anybody right now. He doesn't have a shoe contract. And this is a guy who has an Olympic medal, a couple of Olympic medals in two different events, the 100 and the 400. And but anyway, he hadn't been running all that well, so I didn't think he would make it, but he did. So he's an interesting guy. They asked him this question. They asked, do you feel pressure, you know, on yourself when you're running in these races? And Fred Kerley, who grew up under really bad circumstances, said, this ain't pressure. He said, pressure is living in a house with 16 people and not knowing where your next meal is coming from. That's pressure. And I thought, that's a good,
that's a great,
you know, he's like, you know, track and field is track. This is fun.
It's a race.
Yeah. So it was good. And so we got half of the trials still left. So, and a shout out to two high school kids. I don't know if you saw this, but there was a high school kid named Christian Miller who finished fifth in the 100.
Wow.
Yeah. 9.95, I think. He's run 9.93 this year, as a high schooler. And then Quincy Wilson, he's my favorite. He's in the 400 meters. He finished sixth in the finals of the 400 meters. He's running mid 44s. as, get this, a sophomore in high school. That's just not, and he looks like a sophomore.
Is he the one of those? Who was the kid? We talked about him on this podcast. It's been a while back, but he basically hardly runs, and he was running.
No, that was Cade Flatt.
Cade Flatt.
Yeah, that was Cade Flatt running the 800.
Whatever happened to him? Just disappeared.
Didn't hear from him this year. I think he was hurt, though. I think he had an injury. So yeah. Hopefully we'll hear back from him soon. All right, how about a trivia question for this week? You know, we're less than 1 month away from the opening ceremonies of the Olympic Games in Paris. And I think the most epic moment in history of the opening ceremonies is the lighting of the flame in Barcelona in 1992. So here is the question. How was the cauldron lit in the 1992 Olympic Games?
I don't remember what it was. I remember something.
It was epic. I'll never forget it. It was absolutely epic. I don't know that anybody
drawn a blank.
And everybody has tried to replicate or tried to beat that. And you just can't do it. I don't know how you're going to ever get a better moment than that particular moment. So if you know the answer to that and you're a Run Club member, if you send me the answer to dean@runforgod.com, you will win $20 off in the Run for God store. So get to it. Motivational thought of the week comes from Norman Vaughn. He was a dog sled driver and an explorer who accompanied Admiral Byrd on his first trip to the South Pole. And he said this, he said, "Dream big and dare to fail." I kind of like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the you can't know how far you can go until you go too far kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what if we all just went out there and just went after it and tried to fail? It makes me think about the workout. You know, we've done this workout where I have them run 400 meters and I give them a target to hit the first one. And then the goal is to run each successive one faster and see how many of them they can run.
Yeah.
That's kind of run until you fail. It's a pretty cool idea.
You learn a lot about yourself.
Yeah, you will, for sure. Yeah.
Hey, before you sign off, teach a 5K challenge this January.
Absolutely.
Think about it. I'm daring you. We need you. 100 classes, minimum. I could see it being a lot more than that.
Yeah.
So I feel like 100 is a very manageable, reasonable goal.
And if you're listening to this, you're probably one of those 100.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yep. For sure. Especially if you're listening this late into the podcast, for sure. You're one of them.
You're one of the hardcore guys.
That's right.
Or ladies.
That's right.
Yep.
All right.
Good job, Dean.
Until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
I jumped the gun. Good job, Dean.
For more information about the Run for God ministry, go to runforgod.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There's nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.